All right, we're going to get started with Seminary Wives, but we are not going to let this shut down our conversation tonight. So we want to welcome all of you who will be joining us with the recording. But know that we've got a nice, small, intimate group here tonight. And so you're going to hear all kinds of things. I'm going to make sure that everybody speaks out. They're looking at me like they're not about to say a word. But we will change that. I have a handout for everybody. What we're doing with these handouts, I just so you know, normally I am not a give you my notes person. I actually prefer to teach without giving notes until afterwards. But this, the content is such that I thought it would be helpful to have it on a handout. But as we're talking, you're welcome to look at it, but don't let it be a distraction to you where you're reading ahead from what I want to say, okay? So if you can follow along with me, but at least that way you'll have something in your hands that if you find it's helpful to look back at that, that would be great. Well, let's go ahead and start with prayer. Lord, thank you so much for this time that we have together for Seminary Wives. Lord, you are so good to us, and the fact that you give us the opportunity to be involved in ministry alongside of our husbands is such a joy and delight. And so we thank you for how you worked this evening, for how you brought every woman here, and Lord, even for those that might listen in later, how you've brought them to their husbands and to Countryside and to our seminary here. I ask that you would work through me tonight, Lord, that I would not be a distraction in any way, but that this would be a time that we can look together at some big ideas for philosophy of being involved as ministry wives and pastor's wives. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, you'll notice that I've entitled this Philosophy of Ministry for Pastor's Wives. Now, this is not going to be an all-inclusive discussion tonight. Nor is it going to be so esoteric. Oh, I got to use that word. Since we've thrown philosophy in there, this is not going to be on that level. What I want us to do tonight is to look at a big idea and see how that flows out into implementation into our lives as women who are married to pastors. So I called it Philosophy of Ministry for Pastors' Wives because I couldn't think of another way to describe that, but I think you'll find it so much more than that, but it's also not a full-fledged picture. We could probably have a lot of these sessions and continue to talk about various aspects of philosophy of ministry for pastor's wife, but it's important for those of us married to pastors or pastors in training to seriously examine our role. Why is that important? This is interaction. You're allowed to speak. In fact, I want you to speak. Why is it important that we stop and ponder what our role is to be as women married to pastors? Who wants to jump in?
Because we're married to them.
Yes, because we're married to them. That's a really good place to start. We are individuals before the Lord, but because of the men that we chose to marry, I don't even know that all of us necessarily here thought our husbands would be pastors when we married them. And so that's always an exciting role, is when you marry a man and you never consider being a pastor's wife, married to someone who's in the ministry, and then your husband changes career courses, and so that's exciting. How many of you here, you knew when you married your husband that you'd be in full-time ministry? Okay. Yeah. But very, yeah. Right, right. Full-time ministry, but not pastor. Okay. So, but now this is where we find ourselves, right? We are married to men in ministry, or we are married to pastors. And too often we dive into all kinds of different roles without pausing and seeking to examine closely and to plan well. And we can kind of just get so busy that we don't stop and say, what am I supposed to do here? What does God have to say about this? what is my role in this to be? So tonight we're just going to go over a few highlights of how we should think about our role as pastors' wives. As I mentioned, we're not going to cover everything. We're just going to get a big idea, okay? The first thing that we're going to cover is a wrong view. And I put some of these down here on your highlight, on your handouts. Too high a view. Okay, have you heard women that are married to pastors called the First Lady? Okay, I don't like that title. Okay, now I can appreciate the honor that people are trying to give when they call the pastor's wife the First Lady. But a more accurate title might be First Shepherdess. You know, I am married to the lead shepherd. I don't have an exalted position. My husband doesn't have an exalted position. He is the lead shepherd. He is called to care for the flock. And so I don't love that perspective. I think some women can handle it. I'm not criticizing everyone who might be called the First Lady, but it gives an elevated perspective, and I should be a servant, not somehow people making much of me. I am here to serve people. You are here to serve people. Or too low of a view as a pastor's wife. It's her husband's job. It's just his profession. The wife has no unique role in the church. This is hard for me to fathom, but I have seen examples like this, not in the churches that I've been involved with, but churches that family members are involved with or others, where they each have their own career path. His happens to be that he's the minister or the pastor, and she's a whatever she is. And she may or may not be involved in the church. It's a means of his to be just involved, and it's his career. That's how he makes a living. And she's not involved at all. It's just his profession. Too broad of a view. The pastor's wife is an official position. Pastors Tom and Sheila. You know, pastors Kim and Justin, you know, our pictures up on the billboard or on the flyer that we send out to promote our church.
Mm-hmm. Our first church that we were at, they wanted to put our picture in the newspaper and say, like, welcome, youth pastor. Mm-hmm. And, like, we were like, okay.
Yeah. That is pretty common.
Yeah.
They were pretty excited.
They're excited to show you, but as long as they don't say pastors.
Oh, yeah. They didn't go that far.
You know,
we
it's.
Thought that part we were like.
Right. That's funny. I mean, I had extended family that were involved in the Foursquare Church out in Los Angeles, Los Angeles Temple. And she was pastor, a wonderful woman, really, really delightful woman. But she was a pastor along with her husband and their kids, and their daughter was a pastor because she was married to another pastor. And so that is too broad of a definition. And we know why, because women are not called to be pastors. We are not in an official role of leadership as another pastor or an elder. So in this broad perspective, though, the wife has authority and can use her influence as she desires. She's in leadership in a similar way to the elders and pastors. And so in a church like this, people go to the pastor's wife to say, we need to do this, we need to do that. And she may speak to the other pastors and say, I'd like to see this done. This is how we're going to decorate. This is how we're going to be involved. This is what we're doing. And this happens, okay? This happens in churches. This happens in organizations where the wife in a situation like that, even though she doesn't have, she's not on payroll necessarily, has a leadership position the same as her husband. And in the church, that is too broad. Too narrow a view. It doesn't matter what she's like or what she does. This is his job. She can carve out her own life activities, priorities, pursue her own ministries and interests, just focus on her own children and home, just focus on her own career. Kind of goes along with that low view. But it's the too narrow of a, well, I'm called to be his wife, I'm called to be the mother of our children, I'm called to be at home, but then leaving it there instead of realizing, and you are married to the pastor, and let's just start, we're going to be talking about this, you're a member of a church. Okay, so that's too narrow. So our broad outline is you are more than a pastor's wife. And our second point will be you are not less than a pastor's wife. So you are more than a pastor's wife. Each of us are individuals before God. And so when I come before the Lord, when you come before the Lord, we don't come as Sheila married to, Kim married to, Emily married to, okay? We come as an individual before the Lord. And that is our first role, is before the eyes of God. And so we need to each be cultivating our own souls, our own walk with the Lord, first and foremost. And how do we do that? You know this. How do we do that?
The essentials.
What's that?
The essentials.
The essentials. Yes, the essentials.
Study,
Bible study, prayer, evangelism,
fellowship.
Service, yeah. Fellowship. Did we get them all? I think we did. The essentials. We have to be in the Word. We need to be praying. We need to be using our gifts. We need to be serving others. We need to be evangelizing. All of those things as individuals before the Lord, feeding our own soul and then letting the Lord use us. Our own character. I believe I put in your notes Titus 2. Did I put these in your notes? Yes. Titus 2, Proverbs 31, 1 Peter 3. Those are just some of the passages directly to women that we need to be focusing on our own characters. Our spiritual disciplines, Bible study, prayer, biblical knowledge. Then after that, our families. And we're going to deal with a little bit of this in more detail in just a moment. But obviously, what is our first relationship outside of our relationship with the Lord? As married women, who is our first relationship and our first priority? Our husband. Then if we have children, our children. Our home is part of our priorities. Then our ministry. Now, I left out, obviously, there are other responsibilities that we have to extended family and neighbors and our community and all of that. But for our purposes, we're going to focus primarily on our homes and our families, and then our ministry. But I put this here intentionally next because our first ministry is to whom? Our families, our husbands, our children. It's through our home. It's so easy sometimes to dichotomize for people and to say, this is my home. Oh, now I'm going to minister. Now I'm going to be involved in ministry. No, our first ministry is to our husbands, to our children, through our home. Those are our first ministries. Let's start with our husband. Loving him, supporting him and his ministry. Encouraging him in his godly character and his disciplines. We are to submit and to respect our husbands. We also are to be his chief companion and counselor. And so our chief ministry is to our husbands. Friends, there are times when the best way that we can minister to our husbands is to encourage them and to build them up. There are times when our best ministry to our husbands is to gently confront them. Don't buy the lie that says, if I'm going to be respectful and submissive, then I can never confront my husband. That is not being loving. All of the commands that are made for us to other believers are true towards our husbands. We're to speak the truth in love. When we see them overtaken in a sin, we are to go to them in a spirit of humility, lest we also be tempted after a whole lot of prayer. Okay? But sometimes the best way that we can minister our husband is to cheerfully sacrifice and support him and give him the time to study and to make those phone calls and to go to those meetings. And to come home at 10:30 at night from every Bloomin' Elders meeting. Sorry. 10:30 is late, okay? But that's the best way we can love him is by saying, I'm not going to be irritated. I'm not going to be annoyed. I'm going to cheerfully know that this is what he needs to do. So sacrificing him to give him that time, leaving him alone when he's in his study, and looking under the door and sliding in food and water, you know. I will sometimes check on Tom to see if he's still alive, because the man doesn't come up for air. You know, are you still in here? Have you gotten anything to drink? And he'll go, oh, honey, it's been 5 hours. Really? Okay, giving him something to drink, feeding him, encouraging him to take a break, and then not being mad at him if he doesn't. but cheerfully sacrificing to give him the time and the mental space that he needs for counseling, for hospital visits, but also respectfully advising him if he's out of balance. Hey, sweetheart, do you realize you haven't taken that day off that the church tells you? Oh, yeah, let's not say the church. Let's say, like, God tells you to take off. How long has it been since you've taken a day off? That's not right, honey. That's not good. That's not healthy. Hey, sweetheart, we've got 3 kids, or we've got 5 kids, or we've got 7 kids, or that need you, and they need you to look up when they walk in the room and put your book down. Okay, this is the way that we can love our husbands. Not nagging, not taking on the role of Holy Spirit, too easy to do, but by coming alongside and humbly, kindly helping them in their balance of their own health, their own walk with the Lord. How's your own time with the Lord going? Is it, are you, you're so into your study, preparing? What's that doing in your soul? Okay, I know you've got a lot on your plate, honey, but I need 15 minutes of your time, because I'm being tempted right now to be resentful. Okay? Does that make sense? Where it's not the Holy Spirit, they're not supposed to submit to us. We submit to them. We are their helper. But sometimes the best ministry that we can do is to be that encouragement and also that wise counselor.
Can I ask?
Yes, I would love for you to.
One thing that I have found as I try to do that respectfully and not with a with bitterness in my heart,
mm-hmm.
Is to just ask questions. You know, like, I know that you desire to love us well, or love the kids well. You know, how can I help you do that? Like, just ask him how he would like to be helped in that, so that it's not me even dictating what that help looks like, but it's seeking his direction.
That is excellent counsel. I'm going to restate it just in case your voice isn't picking up on this. Christy said sometimes the best thing to do is to ask questions. And I think that is so great, especially how you said, how can I help you? Okay, sometimes they're going to know. They're going to say, I've known I'm out of balance. You're right. And they're going to in turn ask us questions.
Yeah.
What do you need? What do the kids need? Sometimes they're going to look at us blankly and go, wait, what? And not have a clue what we're talking about. And then we can kindly help them see. And then say, how can I help you? Okay, let's give a very practical example. Okay. It's very difficult to have family Bible times. Agreed? Okay. Your schedules and different stages of life, sometimes it just gets like, how in the world are we going to do this? Okay, I believe that our husbands want to do that. They want to be that spiritual leader. They want to have those family Bible times. Implementing it and making it happen is one way that we can help. But we need to ask, how would you like for me to help? Because it doesn't help to go, are you going to do Bible time? You forgot to do Bible time. Okay. I thought you loved us. I thought you were our spiritual leader. Okay. So for us, Tom was like, put the Bible right on top of my plate. Okay. Now he could move it on occasion and, you know, and still get distracted. But if he came and the Bible was right there, he's like, oh, Bible time. Okay, that was a practical way that we could do, that I could help him. And so instead of getting, okay, true story, and maybe you've felt this way. Have you ever been tempted to go, let's see if you can figure it out? Well, if you haven't, then you're more godly than I am. Because I had too often had thought, let's see if he really wants to do this. He's a big boy. He can handle lots of other things. Mm-hmm. Let's see if he handles this. Hello, is that, I'm to be his helper. Right. We're a team. This isn't a, let's see if he succeeds. Mm-hmm. No, I need to do whatever I can to make him be as successful by God's standards as possible. So for whatever we can do, if it's things with the kids, you know, hey, honey, tomorrow's Friday. Mm-hmm. Remember, you had said you wanted to do Friday morning breakfast dates. Okay, so-and-so is going to be ready at 6:30. Does that still work for you? Okay, but not expecting them to remember everything that they want to do. Their heads are so full. And I'm sure in your marriages and families, there are different examples. But how can we, as wives, as our husband's helper, help him to support him in his ministry, to support him in his role as leader of the family? And then you'll see also here the qualifications for an elder and pastor. And I realize as I was typing those, I didn't put the full passage, but you'll get it. You got the starting verse. Okay, so take a look at those on your own and say, how can I help my husband? You can't make him a godly man, but you can support him. And there may be on occasion, like I mentioned, when you carefully, cautiously, prayerfully, respectfully, submissively confront him and say, honey, I just want you to consider. I don't know if this is true, but I'm concerned. And then leave it with the Holy Spirit. Anything else on that aspect of serving our husbands and ministering to our husbands first that you wanted to add? Yes, Kim.
Say, I know that, like, for me, for our Bible time, I just initiate it. So that's how, and then, honestly, then he'll come in. You know, it's just one of those things, like, he's busy doing his things. And he doesn't know, I'm not like, okay, at 7 we're doing it. You know, I'm trying to put up laundry, do this, do that. And so then I just.
You just get started.
Yep, I just get started, and then it, mm-hmm. they all come together.
Yeah, see, that's, it can, all these things, and that's the beauty of it. Every family is going to implement these things uniquely, and that's as it should be. So those of you who are just starting out, don't feel like I'm going to be the Andersons, I'm going to be the Penningtons, I'm going to be the, you know, no, just say what are the things that we need to be doing, and you can borrow brains, and probably you're going to go, ooh, I like the way the Andersons do that, and the way that the Hayhurst do that, and you're going to come up with some ways that work for you. And so you borrow brains that way. I know with the Bible times, we had all of us together, and then because we schooled at home, I could do a lot more on my own. And so Tom would do certain aspects, and then I had girls, and so there were things that I could do that worked as my teaching background and with the various ages that Tom would do better at some aspects, and then he wanted me to do other things. And so you could mix it all up. But in any way, he's your leader and you're following him, but you're supporting him and making him the best he can possibly be.
I think it is, though, a huge temptation, you know, for us as wives and even families to see our husbands manage the church so well. And remember all of those details and all of those aspects, but then they forget something with the family. And it's really tempting to go there and to be discouraged about that, mm-hmm. and to feel like you don't have the priority that you feel like, and that's where it comes back to just knowing he desires those
yes.
things, and that the Lord has given him a helpmate in the home, like intentionally mm-hmm. to help him in those ways. So, but I do think this is a place where
it is,
because they're so capable.
They're so capable.
And you see them capable.
And so then when they don't remember.
One little failure. Sometimes yeah. Those
can hit hard. And I think when Tom and I have discussed this, because there have been those times. And there have been those times when I've been disappointed or sadly, sinfully irritated and angry. And you know, tempted to have a really rotten attitude. And Tom and I have talked about, and he'll say, honey, you are so capable, that it is kind of an interesting compliment to me, because he says, I know that you will handle that. And so to remember that, I think I've shared this with you before, that I love the view that when you're dating, the man and the wife, the man and the woman are looking at each other face to face. When a man and wife marry, the husband turns and he faces the rest of his life and his responsibilities, and we're still turned towards him, and it feels wrong because we kind of liked this. And it's not that he isn't to nurture us and to care for us and love us, but we are made as his helper. He's not made as our helper. And I think that's where we get it wrong, is when we want him to be our helper instead of realizing that we are made to complete him. And so that's a really good point. When we see those things, and our husbands are incredibly capable, but they're not perfect. And their minds are so full, that's why they need someone to complete them at home. To your children, we won't spend as much time here because this is, we can have a discussion of this another day, but our ministry needs to be to our husband and our children. Sometimes we get a lot more kudos outside of the home than we get inside of the home. And it can be easy for some to get so involved in ministry outside the home that they neglect their children. And we need to be so careful that we not only prioritize our first ministry to our husband and then to our children, but also that our kids know that we prioritize them. Silly example of one way that we did that. We still have, I don't know if you remember, landline phones. Yeah. When my kids were growing up, the older ones especially, our landline was pretty busy. We still have one because we turn our cell phones off at night, and yet we have adult children and we want them to have access to us. And if someone ends up in the hospital in the middle of the night, people know they can call our home phone, but we don't have to get all the everythings on our cell phones. So I don't know how long that'll last, if there'll even be landlines in a few more years, but we still have one. And so that is the phone that would ring when my kids were growing up. And it rang frequently. And we were schooling. And we were doing life. And it would ring. And I would yell, don't answer it. And they'd look at me like, Mom. And I'd say, I'm going to check and see who it is. And I would look. And most of the time I'd say, we've got voicemail. I'll check the voicemail when we're done. Or if I was in the middle of a conversation and my daughter was pouring out her heart, I'm not going to answer the phone. The phone is somebody else. This is my kid. And so they would say, why aren't you answering that? And I would say, I will check. And if it's an emergency, someone's dying, someone's in danger, I will interrupt what we're doing. But you're my priority. And so we will check that. After we're done with this, we will check that after supper. And then if we need to respond, we will respond, but we're not going to turn the whole day topsy-turvy because somebody else is calling. Okay, the same is true with texting. Now, you saw a minute ago, I made the mistake of having my phone out. I turned it upside down because we don't need to answer every single thing and every single person. We prioritize the people that God has prioritized for us. And there are lots of other ways to do that, but our kids need to know. So my kids have to sacrifice a lot. They had to sacrifice a lot. Your kids are going to have to sacrifice a lot. They need to know they're still the most important people to you and to your husband. And this is another way you can help your husband. If his schedule gets so busy that he's not having that time with the family, or time one-on-one with your kids, you need to let him know that they need you right now. With your kids, your attitude towards ministry is going to trickle down to them. If you're constantly complaining, about the sacrifice you have to make and the leadership at the church and the annoying people that keep calling you or whatever it is, guess what they're going to think? Or about your husband, if you're complaining about your husband and he's late again and he's not here for that, and how many times? They're going to pick up on that, and you are going to train them to very effectively to disrespect your husband and to hate the church. And so to let them know that they are the most important and to guard your heart, our hearts, and our mouths about what we say, about everything, but particularly about our husbands and about people in the church. Through our home, using our home, that's got to be a priority. Part of our ministry and our philosophy is to keep our homes where we can open the front door. I'm not saying perfect, but if we can't open the front door without being absolutely appalled because it's unsanitary, then we need to prioritize the care of our home. Because our excellence is going to show in our home, and that's the way we not only serve our family, but we serve other people. In the church, you knew we'd get here. The same expectations as any other church member, and we'll go through each of these in just a minute. They are corporate worship, service, and fellowship. If you've gone through partners, you've got that. Corporate worship, regularly participating, service, using our spiritual gifts, fellowship, getting with other believers in smaller settings for the purpose of building each other up in our spiritual walk. So a woman married to a pastor is not an elder or a staff member. She is to be involved in the life of the church like other members. However, remember, you are not less than a pastor's wife. A woman married to a pastor, the reality is that there are some distinct opportunities, considerations, and responsibilities. So here are some of them. As a pastor's wife, you will be looked to as an example. What you say and do will carry more weight. You're probably not going to go unnoticed. For some of us, that's not a problem. For other ones of us, that's going to be miserable. There will always be more ministry to do than you can possibly do. Always. If you had 25 people in your church, there would be more ministry to do than you could possibly do. Because there will always be more needs than you can meet. Balancing all of these aspects of life will always be challenging. You're not going to meet everyone's expectations. You're going to have unique opportunities to grow and to learn. Unlike other people, you're going to have unique ones. If your congregation is a loving one, you may have special opportunities and privileges. You know, we have found this at Countryside. We've been here 20 years this fall, and we still pinch ourselves because we know that we have a unique situation here. We have an elder board that's humble, godly, unified. We do not take that for granted. We're not cocky about that because we know that's from the Lord. We have a loving congregation. My kids love Countryside. I am so thankful because they have been served and loved on and ministered to and confronted and called out just like other people's kids. And that's an incredible privilege. You're going to have more heartaches and more amazing opportunities to see God's hands than those not in ministry. Okay, more heartaches. Why more heartaches? Those of you who have been involved in ministry a few years, why are pastors' wives going to have more heartaches? Christy?
You get to hear people's struggles and
yes.
Their problems and their sin.
You will know more. Mm-hmm. And when you know more, mm-hmm. It hurts. Mm-hmm. I was sharing with someone. We ended up, and I'll share this again in a minute. I ended up with a house guest this weekend. Totally unexpected. That's why I love that we're 13 minutes from DFW, so we can handle DFW refugees that get stranded. The guest room was not ready. The bathroom was not ready because Katie had just moved out. Mom, sorry, I was going to clean it before I left. So I got to scramble and get it ready and pick her up, and then she didn't fly out until the following night. And so I had, you know, 24 hours unexpected guest and ministry time. But I got to, we were talking, and she's had some things go on in her life, and I'm going to be vague because I'm recording this. But in sharing with her what I've shared with others, that the more you find out about other people's stories, the more you find out that as difficult and unique as your situation is in many ways, you find out there are a lot of hurting people. And so what I shared with her was, when I go into church, even a church our size, I look and go, backstory, 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 and I'm amazed. Okay? As a pastor's wife, you know heartaches, and you know the wrongs that have been done to some of these people, and you know the incredible work of the Holy Spirit to bring them to the point that they're in, that they're at, and you see God's transforming power. So you have more heartaches, but you also have such incredible blessings, because you know the backstories that not everybody knows. And so there will be situations that I'll look at and I'll see this seemingly perfect couple with their perfect children, and know that but for the grace of God, that was a disaster. They never should be together, and yet they are. And so it's an incredible blessing, but it also comes with a lot more heartache, because you know the pain and you've been there for a lot of the heartache. So you're not less than a pastor's wife. Those things are still true. Any of those that you want to comment on or have any further insight into? Okay, great. I think each of them could be a lesson. In fact, I think we've done expectations and balance and all of that. So, we have the same responsibilities as other church members, but in what ways do our responsibilities differ as a pastor's wife? Okay? So, every church member needs to be involved in worship. Every church member needs to be involved in service. Every church member needs to be involved in fellowship. But let's go through the three main aspects of participation, this time as a woman who is married to a pastor, okay? So, corporate worship. You need to regularly be in corporate worship. If your gift is serving in the nursery or other ministry, you need to be creative in how to be in worship regularly. Being in children's ministry or whatever, I'm not picking on children's ministry, but that's the one that can take people out of corporate worship, is not an excuse not to be involved with corporate worship, especially if your husband's preaching, okay? And so if that's your thing, then you need to be creative in how to use your gift, but be involved regularly in corporate worship. Plan your week around Sunday. Start Sunday morning preparations on Saturday night at the latest. You know, you've heard this. Sunday morning starts Saturday night. Probably starts before Saturday night, because you got to do the laundry and make sure they actually have the shoes. And when your kids are small, to lay all that out the night before, because nothing will make you less prepared for worship than what goes on Sunday morning. And as you're yelling in the van, and then get out of the car, good morning, hello, welcome to church. Okay, so start early, set everything out, Bibles, notebooks, pens, whatever it is, start early. When you have babies, make sure that you've thought through that diaper bag and the extra bottle and the extra outfit for when they blow out in first service and you've still got second service to go, although they have extra clothes in the nursery too. And you'll come home with all kinds of things that you're like, okay.
My kids in my
cart. See? Oh, Kim, that's awesome. You are so prepared. No, that's great. Well, and even for I still most of the time pick my outfit out the night before, most times. Now, I will tell a story on myself. I was really sick in 09 and 10 and had been out a long time, just completely. And one of my first Sundays back, it was a lot of effort just, I mean, taking a shower did me in for the next 3 days during that season. So it was a big deal to get out the door. And I came to church, it was one of my first Sundays back, and I'm walking across campus and I look down and I have mismatched shoes on. Oh. I thought, people are gonna go, ooh, what has Sheila been? You know, and so I drove home to change shoes, to come back. But they're mismatched shoes. Oh, that wasn't even my kids. It's one thing to do to your kids. It's another to have it on you. So pick out your shoes the night before.
You stand with one, and then you stand
exactly,
with the other. Exactly. You forget.
Thankfully, they're both were the same color, but different. Oh, different. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. So start ahead. Teach your children to love church. Your attitude will set the tone for the family. Coming to church is a privilege. And so do whatever you can to make it, I love the word winsome, make life as winsome as possible. There's so many things in life that are not winsome, okay? That are not pleasant, that are not cheerful, that are not attractive. Do whatever you can to make it winsome. And so don't be making Sunday mornings miserable and Sunday afternoons miserable and Sunday nights miserable and Wednesday nights miserable. Do whatever you can to make it a special time. For years, when we were all involved in Wednesday night things, we went out for dinner. I mean, it wasn't like Jason's, you know, but it was dinner. And Jason's now, I mean, you get umpteen kids, Jason's is quite a commitment. But we would go out for dinner on Wednesday night before all of our activities, just as midweek, and we went out for supper. Things like that, that don't have to be, they don't have to spend money, but to make it special. Having ice cream after church Sunday night, or whatever it is. Special pins in their Bible bag, yes. Notebooks when they're little, all kinds of things. Whatever you can do to make it, a new notebook. That's I still like a new notebook. I still get excited about that. So, but your attitude will set the tone. And as the mom, you know the saying, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Well, if mama makes things happy, it's more likely everybody is going to be happy. And so be creative in how you handle ministry and church. With service, use your gifts. And you'll notice I restate it. I say use your gifts. Remember, you are married to a pastor, but you are an individual before the Lord. And you have unique gifts. Each one of us has a unique palette of gifts. You may have some overlap with your husband. You may not. And so the second time, it says, sometimes you will need to serve in ways which you do. Oh, no, I'm getting there. Sorry, I skipped ahead. I was actually looking at the third one. Complement the use of your gifts to your husband's ministry. For instance, if the two of you have differing gifts, you need to use your gifts while at the same time being supportive of your husband and his ministry. And this may take creativity and strategic planning. You know, sometimes it works out great where you both fit in a ministry. Sometimes that doesn't work out so great. And so you will have to use creativity in that. But you need to be supporting your husband while at the same time using your own spiritual gift. Then, the second point there. Sometimes you'll need to serve in ways in which you do not feel and maybe aren't good at, but need to be done. Okay, the first 10 years we were here, I went to Kathy Mason at VBS and I said, I'll be your floater. Just stick me wherever you want me. Okay, she stuck me in rec.
Yeah.
My kids are like, you're doing rec? Yep. It was awesome because I got to see, wow, I really appreciate these people who are doing rec. It was not necessarily my area of giftedness. I found out that two-year-olds, a classroom of two-year-olds, was not my best spot. They only played with their name tags. But I was on my own. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm filling this role because it was needed and I'm not good at it. And yet that's when I had it all to myself. And I'm like, wow, this is hard. And I found out what I wasn't good at. You know, and then other areas, I just felt like I soared and I really enjoyed it. But it was needed at that time. And then it was lovely to get to a point where it's like, ha, 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 ha. I wasn't needed as a floater anymore. And so in a small church, you do what needs to be done when you're starting something. Okay, Tom and I helped start a fellowship group out at Grace Church. We helped. They didn't have any Old Testament Sunday school classes. That's what they call them, fellowship groups. And so we helped start with four other couples, sojourners. And it was an Old Testament Sunday school class. Well, we all got together, and, you know, the people who were going to teach were going to teach, and Tom and I did the refreshments. Tom was not particularly gifted at refreshments. You know, I'm teasing. He does a great job. But that would not be a spiritual gift, okay? But we did refreshments until some of the class grew and other people who that was their love and that's what they enjoyed doing. Well, then nobody was doing music. Tom did music in Sojourners for 6-7 years before he ever taught. And he did the music. And so every week, you know, he figured out what songs they were and Jay Flowers played the guitar and that was the music. So nobody was doing shepherding. So at that point, I didn't have kids. So I organized the shepherding. And I learned so much through that. But then we grew into different roles. It was similar in a small church where you may be called to organize the nursery, even though that's not your thing, or to do music. Now you have to have some understanding of a little bit, but not much. Whatever it is. So there will be times when we're each called on to do things that we don't necessarily feel good at, and honestly, we may not be particularly good at, but there are seasons when we just step in because somebody needs to serve the tables. Somebody needs to change the diapers. So be willing always to do what needs to be done. At our first church in Gaffney, South Carolina, we had prayer meeting on Wednesday nights, and Tom would go get his tool belt after prayer meeting and fix the vacuum cleaner and fix the light switch, and we all cleaned the church. Mm-hmm. It was a small church, and that's just so after it was done, we all just cleaned the church. That's what we needed to do. And it was good for the people in the church to see Tom with his tool belt on. You know, like, oh, most preachers can't, you know, don't know how to use a screwdriver, is what they would say. And so it was a hands-on. These men worked with their hands, and it was like, oh, Tom can do this, and he was willing to do this. My dad, boy, I forgot about this one. My dad pastored in rural Georgia, 175 miles away from our home. So he taught college 5 days a week, and then we'd drive to Georgia 3.5 hours away on Saturdays and drive back Sunday night, get home at midnight, start the whole week all over again. My dad had a PhD, Dr. Smith. It was a farming community. He pulled calves. I mean, he helped them birth calves because that's what needed to be done. That wasn't at the church. But he happened to stop by when they're pulling a calf. Do you know what that is? They tie a rope to the back and they pull the calf out when they're birthing the calf. And Dad just did what needed to be done. And they were just in awe that Dr. Smith would get his hands dirty. And so, again, just an example of doing whatever needs to be done, whatever your hand finds to do. Every woman is called to be a Titus 2 woman. That includes being one who disciples others and who is becoming a teacher of good. The older women are to train the younger women in their priorities and character. We know this, but let's personalize that. And each one of us needs to be involved in discipleship. That doesn't mean each one of us will have a discipleship group all the time. Beth has a discipleship group. They're called Seven Children in her home.
Yes.
She's
slow down.
Okay. Oh, you got six. She's got seven. Yeah, woo, not an announcement there. Okay, there are times when, I mean, I would have to remind myself of that when my kids were at a certain stage. And because I love to teach, I love disciple. And I'm like, and this is my main ministry right here, right now. And this is my discipleship group. And then there come other seasons when you can disciple women outside of your home. But we all need to be in training to be teachers of good, and we all need to be involved in the lives of other women. Focus a good bit of your discipleship on building up your leaders. Okay, as you are involved in ministry, it can be tempting to spend all of your time with the people that are having the most problems. Okay, and I'm not saying that we don't spend time with people that have problems. We all have problems, but you know what I'm talking about. And as you're involved in ministry more, you'll know more and more what I'm talking about. Because what can happen is it can be where you spend all of your time or an inordinate amount of your time with people in extreme difficulties. Sometimes that cannot be helped. There are extreme difficulties that people can't help, okay? There are also a lot of problems that people bring on themselves that don't need to take all of somebody else's time. And so much of ministry is discerning, is this really a crisis or is this a perceived crisis? And that's a whole nother lesson. But that's a skill that each person in ministry has to learn. And so I teased a minute ago when I was talking about yelling, don't answer that. What I was doing and what I was having to teach my girls is there are times when we set aside our plans because someone else needs us. There are other times when people think they need us and they don't. Okay, what happens when you go to the emergency room? Where do you go first? Maybe you don't have as much experience as I do going to the emergency room. Check-in desk. Where do you go after the check-in desk?
Sit down and write tons of forms.
Yes. Then, after that, you go to triage. Okay? But about 3 hours later, you go to triage. Now, if you walk in and your hand is off, they triage you more quickly.
Yeah.
Than if you're throwing up or you have a fever of 105, but you're not passing out. Okay, but in medical field, they triage. In ministry, we have to triage. It's not that we're heartless. It's not that we're not compassionate. It's that we have to be compassionate in priority order. Does that make sense? We cannot spend our time with a person who is a spiritual hypochondriac and then not spend the time discipling and building up the church, okay? Or taking care of the person that is truly in crisis. Truly in crisis means their personal safety is at risk. They are in harm's way. They are about to commit suicide. Their child has run away. Okay, these are immediate crises. When they've been married for 22 years and they've been fighting for 21 and a half, you don't have to drop everything to deal with that tonight. That can wait. I had to learn this working in family ministries at Grace Church, because every crisis I'd be like, and Fred, the pastor, would say, they've been doing this for 15 years. They're meeting with me Monday. It can wait. And he was the most compassionate man I knew. And he was right, because they'd call me back and say, take that message off Fred's desk, because we're going to meet with him next week. And he'd go, see? I knew it wasn't really a crisis. So, triage. But the point of triage is to be able to spend the time really pouring into people. And the people that we need to pour into in each of our ministries, yes, everybody. But we can't disciple everybody. And we can't pour the same amount of energy into everybody. So pour them into your leaders. Okay, for instance, Esther's not here right now. But Esther is, I think of her ministry, because when 128 started, our career singles, it was Patty and Chaz. You know, they were it. And they were the leaders for years. But then as the ministry grew, that can't happen. And so as Esther and Vikram came in, they already had some leadership, but Esther and Vikram now pour more of their time into training their leaders. Justin and Kim have done this for years. You all did this for years in children's ministry. You still do. You pick those leaders, or usually those leaders rise to the top, and it becomes obvious who's a leader. And you pour your energies into them. Why? Because you like them better? Why? Why do you pour your energy into your leaders?
Because then from them, as they're growing, then they can grow the others.
Yes.
Yeah. As their faith is
multiplication. You pour into your leaders, then they pour into their people. And so now, instead of trying to disciple 25 people, you've picked your three. They disciple others who in turn disciple others. Okay, so remember, multiplication.
Well, and I would say one thing that's been interesting is how people, some people wait to be asked to serve, you know, so it's just interesting knowing different people. Others will rise up. Others, I just remember one where Justin would like constantly have to encourage him to do stuff, and he was like, I'm spending all this time, and there's like three guys over here that are able to, so I'm going to shift my direction. You know, I spent my time, but it's time to shift it. So I guess, and again, there's some people, they're just sitting there, and they want to be asked, and then they rise up to it, you know, so it's just trying to filter all of that.
Because on the other hand, you have people that come and say, I'm here to lead.
Yes.
I'm here to teach.
Yeah.
I'd far rather have people, gifted people, say, who am I to step forward? And, you know, I want to serve, but I'm not going to take a leadership role. Then what we're having a little bit more now that is harder to navigate is the I'm here to lead, I'm here to teach. Because then you're like, well, actually, no, you're not. Or wait, do whatever needs to be done, and let's get to know you. And then sometimes those people, they're just accustomed to their churches. That's the way they do it, is the people who teach Sunday school are the people who volunteer to teach Sunday school, you know, without any affirmation from the leadership. So however they come up, whether they rise up or we observe, because sometimes you do, sometimes you'll observe people, and you kind of have to bring them along and say, actually, I see this in you. And they don't see it. And you're saying, trust me. I see this in you. You can do this. And you've observed how they've handled other situations, so you know they're capable of that. But build up your leaders. Spend your time multiplying yourself. Fellowship. You need fellowship. You need to be edified and challenged by others in your spiritual walk, even as the wife of the pastor. We don't, as pastors' wives, just have it all nailed, and we're self-sufficient, and we don't need friends. We need friends. We need stimulation. We need to be confronted. We need to be called out. We need to be encouraged and challenged. And so we need that fellowship. Choose your close friends carefully. Be friendly to all, but close to a few carefully selected friends. Your closest friends should be mature believers who stimulate and encourage you in your Christian walk. Okay, did you hear that? Sometimes that means letting friendships fade, which is always hard. I think we've probably all had to walk through that. Sometimes that surprises us because we think someone is mature. And then as life goes on, maybe they change, maybe we just get to know them and we realize this is not someone I need to be close to. Does that, it looks like that resonates with everybody. We understand that. So sometimes we have to let those go. But as we're developing friendships, and I think of you, especially those of you who will be going into other church situations, go slowly, be friendly to all, but go slowly, because it is so hard to pull back in a friendship. Something that I had to be careful of is I can overpromise so easily. My heart at that moment is, let's get together, let's do this, let's do that. And then I'm like, I shouldn't have said that, I don't have time for that, or this isn't the person that I need to do this with. So be friendly, but don't overcommit. And you can't be best friends with everybody in the church. And there are those who will want to be your best friend, first of all, because you're so wonderful, but secondly, because you're married to the pastor, and thirdly, because they're lonely and they don't have other friends. Okay, so be careful, because if you're a people pleaser at all, or if you have a heart of compassion, you're going to want to meet that friendship need, and you're not going to be able to do that.
Can I ask a question about
yes.
that? How do you do that graciously without being too cold? You know,
it's very difficult. And there are times, and I think we've all had to go through this, there are times when you have to practice our lines. Okay, and that might sound cold, but there was a time when I was getting so many invitations and I didn't know how to handle it, is to say something like, that is so kind of you, and I love that idea. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that right now because of what we're trying to do in our family and settling in. And then you come up with an alternative, like, but I am so looking forward to the spring event, you know, or something that is more of a group kind of a setting that you can see them. And it's hard. And sometimes people won't take no. And then honestly, that's on them. You know, there are people who can force it to the point where you almost have to be rude. And so that's difficult to navigate. I'm thinking of one individual where there was no other way. I can't even text this person back without a, like, can't handle it. And there's always, will you do this? Will you do this? Can I come over? And you're like, can't. And I know it's not just me. It's this. It's the way this person responds. So now I wait 3 days before I do the, and that's all I can do. And even that elicits a whole nother flood. And so I've had to learn to say, I have to be okay with that. I have to be okay with that. I can't get an attitude. I can't not love that person, but loving that person does not mean doing everything they want me to do. I'm having a hard time with this right now, honestly, because I only have so much energy and so much time before my surgeries and other things. I have so many people I want to be with, and I can't. And it's difficult for me to say no. But the people that know me and love me are going to give me an out. And they do. Okay, they do. They say, I love you. I would love this, but no pressure. Okay, we can all handle that. But occasionally you're going to have the person who wants to put pressure. Okay, that's harder. And so that's the kind of situation where you may want to practice your lines. And you may need your husband's help or an older woman in the church that knows, because some of that is going to depend on the culture. It's probably not going to happen to you if you move to Pennsylvania. Okay? I mean, there are parts of the country where you're going to wish someone wanted to be your friend. I love Pennsylvania. No, but there's a different mindset. Or in the Northeast, you know, where you're not going to get 100 invitations. You're going to be happy if you get any. But then there are places that are super, super warm and super, super friendly. And so you're going to want to triage and strategically plan how, when we are at church, we need to be available to everybody God puts in our path. Okay, that doesn't mean we have to see everyone at church. That is not humanly possible. But we come in with an open smile and an open countenance. Our kids know that this is, we love them. Now we're at church. This is not the time, as soon as they're old enough to understand. I mean, this is not the time when we have our most intensive discussions. That's gonna wait. With our friends, if they truly are our friends, they're going to understand that they have to share us and if at church. And if they don't understand that, that shows something about their maturity. Okay? Our closest friends, church is not the time to hang out with your closest friends, to sit with them every week, to be locked in head-to-head conversation every week. Sure, you're going to have friends that you see. I'm not saying don't smile and talk to your friends, but we shouldn't be so locked in to this, you know, just a few people. When we're at church, we belong to everybody. And then we carve out those times when we can have those closer relationships. I want to be balanced with that, because I don't want to sound like we can't talk to our close friends at church. Not saying that. But we don't lock in to where we communicate and or it could properly be perceived that we only have this circle and these are the only people we talk to. Okay, balance me out if I'm not sounding balanced in that, because it's important. Okay, so pick your friends carefully. And your friends, I was listening to something today with pastor's wives, and I love the way she said this, and I get this. Our closest friends won't need to know everything we know. They shouldn't. But we can say, I'm having a hard time. And that suffices. Or I'm having a real attitude about a person. Don't tell them who the person is. Okay? I'm really struggling in this. Pray for me. A good, mature friend is not going to go, who? What? Why? What do the elders say about that? What are they doing with this? What are they doing with that? You'll get those kind of people who pump. Those aren't your good friends. Those are people who are using you to get information. Kim looks like Annika. Oh, your kids for sure. We tease our kids. My kids are now older, okay, so I can pick on my kids. We were talking about with a pastor's wife about this recently, a pastor's family. You know, our kids, we never talked about people in the church in front of our kids, and they'd go, we'd be whispering like this, you know, and they'd hear it from the second floor back of the house. Who? What? Come down. What are you guys talking about? We're talking husband and wife. You're not part of this conversation. Well, do I know them? Do they have kids my age? Does their last name start with? You know, like, do we ever tell you? No. So, yes, it can be your family members or even your own children. But you need fellowship. A word here about hospitality. Christy texted this to me recently. Hospitality takes many forms. I'll quote her even though she's sitting here. But an important part of life and ministry in the church. Again, it takes many forms, not just meals in your home, but can be a huge way to be a blessing to your husband and his ministry. You also are not the sole welcomer and greeter of all new people in the church or various ministries your husband oversees. It's not all on you or your responsibility, but your warmth and caring about them matters a lot. Back to the open expression, actively being friendly to strangers, and being willing to sacrifice your time for them. Prioritize relationships with the elders' wives, staff wives, deacons' wives, and lay leaders' wives. These are your co-laborers. Whoever you are in ministry with, prioritize those relationships. Not that you can't have friends. Oh, they're not an elder's wife, a pastor's wife, a deacon's wife. Can't have that as a friendship. But look at your friendships and say, are many of my friendships made up of these people that I am co-laboring with? We are so blessed here, and we've talked about it a lot. We have a very tight-knit group of ministry wives. It's all of the staff leadership wives. We meet together monthly. We have a group chat that's pretty active. It's not annoyingly so most of the time. No, it's not. It's never annoying. But we share prayer requests. We share funny things. We laugh. We cry. We share our hearts carefully. We're always respectful. We don't sit there and talk about church matters in anything but an appropriate way, but we're very close. And we guard that. We get away twice a year with different aspects, sometimes just a meal, but we try to get away. We love each other and we really like each other. And we're determined not to let divisions come between us. And that was something I was listening to today, too, on a recording about how important it is to keep those relationships, especially with your leaders. But you know what? I'll say even beyond your leaders. And now I'm going to break away from this a little bit. But philosophically, we need to each guard our hearts about getting attitudes about other people in the church. I have seen other churches that there have been decades of wrong attitudes and unresolved conflicts between people, and it's ugly. It's just ugly. And you'll talk to various people and they're constantly talking about other people and just going, wait a second, we cannot have that. The last few years, the Lord has been convicting me that on occasion, there has been a short list of people I'm struggling with my attitudes about. And every time the Lord brings that a person like that to mind, I have to confess it and pray to love that person. It might not mean that I get to hang out with them or that I need to do anything, but I cannot allow sinful attitudes about other people in the church. It doesn't mean that I think everybody's perfect and, oh, but rather saying, I need to esteem others as more important than myself. I need to believe the best. And even if we differ on issues, okay, we differ on issues. It's all right. I need to love them. So we can't allow those attitudes. Guard your heart and your mouth. We must be extremely cautious in what we say. What we say matters. As pastors' wives, especially, everything we say is amplified. Okay? If I stand in a hallway and I grumble about something at church, I might as well have a megaphone. Okay? It's going to have a huge impact. Privately, if I go about someone or something or a decision going on or another department or a ministry that I'm not involved with, it matters. And it's going to be divisive and it's going to be hurtful. Be especially careful what we say about ministries we're not involved with. If you're not involved in children's ministries, don't critique it to other people. If you're not involved in women's ministries, don't critique it. Just because you're a woman doesn't mean you know everything behind the scenes in women's ministries, okay? If you're not involved in youth, then trust Justin. Okay, if you've got whatever we have, we should handle issues and disagreements and questions just like anybody else in the church. What should we tell somebody in the church if they come to us with a problem with another ministry in the church? What should we do?
Go to that person.
Okay. There have been times when there have been people that have stopped me and complained about the elders. And I smile. I try to smile. And say, I'm not an elder. Talk to the elders. Are you involved? Who can you go to? Talk to your ministry leader. If you're in a Titus 2 group, you've got two leaders. Talk to them. They can talk to Kathy Mason. Kathy Mason can talk. Okay? Talk to the ministry leader, not anybody else.
And I will say, I have noticed sometimes the most critical people are the ones that are very loosely tied.
Yes.
To a ministry or to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you give them those things, and usually there's no follow through.
Yeah,
and
usually they won't.
And like, yeah, usually their whole life, it's not just your one area that they're complaining about. They kind of do that in all life.
Yes.
And so that's just one thing I have noticed.
That's true.
Critical people, they usually aren't involved. Yes.
Yes. And I've shared this with in other sessions. There actually was a time when I had to change my path on church campus on Sundays. I had to take a different sidewalk because this woman every Sunday would come and complain about something that the elders were doing. And I told her to go to the elders, and she just liked to come to me no matter what. So I just got to where this isn't helping her, sure not helping me. I'm going to walk the long way to check my kid in because she wasn't going to hear it and she wasn't going to change. And she needed not to tell me. I didn't need to hear that. I have gotten very good at saying, I am not involved in that. Please go talk to them. Because not only is it not right for me to listen, honestly, it steals my joy. And it changes my attitude about people. Yeah, it just, a joy sucker. Mm-hmm. So there were a few people in my life over the few years that felt like I needed to know every single thing that went on in the church. And I have been able to say, no, I don't. If you need counsel for how to handle it, don't use names. And we'll talk. And then there are times, I've had to do this with you once. I had to say, I actually have to ask a name because there's a good reason for it. Be careful even what we say to our husbands, okay? Just because he's our husbands doesn't mean we need to, that we have a get out of speaking carefully card, okay? Ephesians 4:29 applies to how we speak to our husbands. We can destroy somebody to our husbands. We could destroy somebody, one of our co-elders or a staff or a person in the church because of what we say to our husbands. There are times that they don't need to know. Now, we need wisdom in that. Let me give you an example. I was made privy to a situation years ago about a person. It had nothing to do with any ministry Tom was involved with. I needed to know about it because I was counseling this individual how they needed to handle it. And she finally did have to tell me who, because it didn't make sense unless I knew who. So I knew who. I knew what. Didn't tell Tom. He didn't need to know. It would have changed his attitude about them. And I only had the one side because I wasn't involved in bringing these people together. So fast forward 3 years later, this person is being put forward for leadership. Guess what? Tom needed to know. Jonathan needed to know. The elders needed to know. But they didn't need to know until then. Okay? And so I made that decision. And when I did need to say, I said, Tom, something happened. It never was resolved. I didn't tell you about it at the time. I'm telling you about it now because it would be an important piece of information as you're looking at this person for a leadership position. And he goes, no, we do need to know that. Does that make sense as far as the different motive? It goes to motive. Are we just venting? You know, are we just irritated? Do we just not like them? Did they not do something the way, and our kids didn't like it, and you know, and now we've got an attitude because they didn't get the part in this, or they didn't get that, or their discipleship group leader, whatever. You know, just be very careful in what we think, in what we believe, and in what we say, even to our husband, and then especially what we say to other people in the church. Other considerations. I already mentioned this first one, but prioritize gatherings like elders and staff get-togethers, ministry wives, seminary wives, other gatherings of leadership. It might be those groups may be different in your future church. Value these and work on your schedule around these priorities. Again, these are your co-laborers. Prioritize all church events and special events that are important to the people in your ministry, showers, weddings, funerals. Obviously, the larger the church ministry, the more you'll have to wisely select. I can no longer go to every wedding, every shower, and every funeral. I did for years. And then it got to the point where my health didn't allow it, and now just time won't allow it. There's no way that any of us can do everything here at Countryside. But know that those are important things. When it's the people that are in your ministry and in your world, show up for the events that are important life events for them. And when they're all church events, it's not that you have to go to every all church. It's when nobody here or anywhere thinks that, well, nobody here thinks you should be there every time the doors are open. Okay? No, you shouldn't. Nobody is. You need to be careful under your husband's leadership. If you have questions about that, ask your husband. I always get this one wrong. I still, to this day, Tom and I have been married a long time, and I still can't always tell what he thinks is important for me. I'll go to him and say, I feel like I really need to go to this. He goes, no, you don't. And then something else will come along, and I'll go, I'm not planning to go to that. Oh, it'd really be good if I really would. You would? It matters? Okay. So, ask your husband. Take advantage of every means to grow in your biblical knowledge, experience of ministry, learning for others, especially by those who have been in ministry longer than you have. Remember, you will have greater influence as a pastor's wife. However, you do not have more authority. You are a church member, so direct people. We talked about this to the proper ministry leader when they come to you. We're to handle issues that come up just as any other church member. Don't use your platform to push for your desires. Don't take on issues that aren't yours to deal with. I emphasize those because, believe it or not, even if you don't see that you might be tempted, you probably will. You've got opinions. I don't have any. I'm emphasizing this one today because something came up I have very strong opinions about. And I got to preach to myself today and say, you're not an elder, you're not an elder, you're not an elder. This isn't your business, Sheila Pennington. Give this to the elders and let it go. And that's what I'm doing. But I had to preach to myself because I really care. It's nothing any of you guys know about. It's opportunity that may or may not come our way that I have an opinion about. So I wrote this for me. Don't use your platform to push for your desires. Don't take on issues that are not yours to deal with. Like everyone who has a full life, you will have to prioritize the important, and you will constantly have to adjust your expectations and your schedule. Last weekend, I stayed home from church because I wasn't feeling well, and I thought I needed rest because I was coughing and coughing and coughing and coughing and coughing, and then I ended up having a house guest. Okay? So I had 2 minutes to make my decision, and I'm sitting here going, oh, wow. A house guest until tomorrow night. I need to do this. This is important. She's stranded. This is hospitality, taking care of strangers. Okay? And it truly was my joy, but I had to work through a process. There were times right after my surgery, got the same phone call from a different person saying, I thought I had a place to stay for a wedding in DFW. I don't, can I stay? Like, I'm 2 weeks out of having a double mastectomy. Can't quite handle that right now. And had to say no. Okay, it's not that one answer is always right. We're constantly having to evaluate, under our husband's leadership, what we can take on and what we can't. And so adjust our expectations. I had to adjust the condition of the home. The bathtub upstairs is not to my standards, okay? It's okay. She didn't care. She had a bed to sleep in with fresh sheets, and she could tell that I basically wiped down the bathroom. Okay, but it wasn't to my standards. It's okay. It doesn't matter. A word about schedules. I wrote this down. Work at seeing those activities over which you have control, your personal time, your family times, those things that others are not dependent upon you, as guidelines. They're not exactly rules, they're guidelines. Life will go far more smoothly and you will be able to respond with flexibility and joy. What do I mean by that? If you're supposed to show up and teach Sunday school, that is not a guideline, okay? Be there. It's a commitment. If other people are counting on you and you have committed, then you need to be there. But you know what? A lot of life is not that. When you have breakfast, when your kids take naps, when you get to bed, those are things you have control over. There are a lot of family activities that you have control over. Getting your kids to school is not a guideline. It's a rule. You got to get them there, okay? So, yeah, true. And you can take them out of school for important things. And so, but just knowing the difference, because we can go on either end, can't we, where woo, life is just fluid all the time, and that's not good. Or we can become so rigid that, nope, can't do that ministry because my kids go to bed at 8, and it doesn't end until 8:15. not good. They can go to bed late. Often, actually, and still survive. What?
They're better
for it. Exactly. And they learn that there are times when you get to do things your way, and there are most of the times when you don't. Now, you still need to love your kids. They need to get enough sleep. You need to feed them. They need to be clothed. But we need to adjust our expectations often, and be willing to flex and to realize that the priorities of yesterday may not be the priorities of today, and be willing to flex with that. So remember, you are more than a pastor's wife. You are not less than a pastor's wife. Being married to a pastor is an incredible privilege. It does carry with it weighty opportunities and privileges, but we can only fill our role through Christ's enabling strength. Pursue the Lord, feed your soul, build up your character, focus on loving the people and fulfilling the priorities God has given you, but do all of this in full dependence on Him.